This episode of A Medic's Mind is brought to you by Winter Tickle Press, a premier publishing house who specializes in nonfiction mental wellness books based on lived experiences. Titles include Save My Life School, Daily Lessons of Save My Life School, Brainstorm Revolution, and stories Finding Your Wings, all available for order through Chapters Indigo, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon US, UK, and Canada. You can follow Winter Tickle Press on Facebook at Winter Tickle Press, or find them on Twitter at Winter Tickle. Welcome to A Medic's Mind. Thanks for coming by. I have a bit of a unique episode today. Well, I guess. I've done this before. Well, no, I haven't really done this before. Okay. Sorry. I am all over the place. I have a read for you, but I also have a read for you in my semi-constructed sound booth. I've put some insulation to it. So hopefully, if you're listening to this via earphones, the sound quality should be a lot better. Hopefully. Not perfect. I'm still working on it. I still got to pad the walls and close in some stuff, but it should cut down the reverberation that you've heard in previous episodes. So when I say I have a unique episode, I wrote something the other day, and it's I'm hoping it's going to be featured in my upcoming book eventually, that I'm hoping to get out this year. I sent it off to my publisher already, so I'm just waiting for her feedback on it. But I've tailored it a little bit, because there's a difference between reading something and me orating something. Sometimes some of the things that I write are, they need to be contextualized with the rest of what I've written previous. So this is a standalone piece, and if I had read it verbatim of what I'd written, it really wouldn't make sense in a lot of parts. So I've kind of had to tailor it a little bit to fit sort of a narrative oration episode. But anyway, you'll get the general gist of what I'm trying to write. So I'll give you a bit of backstory about it. The piece is called Jackets. And I started thinking about this one day. As I so often do, I ruminate. I'm kind of a ruminator, which is not to be confused with the Terminator. I'm not at all ripped, jacked, or physically fit. And I'm definitely not, a sexy cybernetic robot. Anything but, in fact. Ruminator. So I started thinking about Jackets, and I started thinking about that old saying, you know, he's worn many hats. I don't know if you've heard that saying. It sort of refers to maybe being skilled at a lot of things, jack of all trades kind of thing, done a lot of jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And I started thinking, well, I haven't really worn many hats, but I've worn a few jackets. And I started thinking about the jackets, and I actually went to my closet, and there is my dress uniform from the military that hangs there. I have my high visibility jacket from EMS that hangs there, and I have my dress jacket from being a paramedic that hangs there. And so I came back after making a tea, and I sat down and started writing this piece. And so this is only one section of a bigger story. I'm just reading about one jacket in this particular oration. I kind of just wanted to get it out there and see what the feel is, see what you guys think of it, see if I can get some feedback on, is it a piece that if you're reading it that you're interested in? Is it something that brings out emotion from somebody? Can you hear the emotion or feel the emotion that I'm trying to get through to it, or get through writing it? Because I know that jackets are arbitrary, but these specific jackets are anything but to me. They hold a lot of memories, a lot of stories, and literally, not just figuratively, they hold a lot of blood. And so these jackets mean something to me, and writing this piece meant something to me. So like I said, there's more to this piece. This is just a very isolated snippet of what I've written, but I wanted to get it out there. And see what you guys think of it. So that's what I'm going to do. The piece is called Jackets, and I'm going to read it for you right now. You may have heard of the term worn a lot of hats. Well, I've not owned many hats. At least,
not in the way of which it is meant. Jackets, though, I have owned and worn a few of those. Jackets of all sizes, shapes, materials, and purposes. And the most painful thing that I have ever had to do was take them off. Jacket number one. Men's. Dark green land. Size 7338. Production August 1988. Shell 65% wool, 35% polyester. This jacket was not gifted to me. It was earned. And to this day, and likely for the remainder of life that I have left, it will remain one of the most important and influential garments that I have ever worn. It has seen death, celebration of life, graduations, and achievements. It has hugged my skin as the rest of me rattled on those cold, unforgiving days. It is a jacket that boasts respect, devotion, and honor. It is a rare coat, worn by only a few. A damn few. Tape measures, pins, and chalk were the ingredients that gave this jacket life. And when it was given to me to hold, wear, and care for, it grew with me as well. First, no chevrons. Then one. Then two. Corporal Hennigan. That is what this tightly fitted and immaculate jacket screamed to the world. Its buttons gleamed flawlessly when embraced by the kiss of a warm sun. Badges and accoutrements adorned his tunic, proudly on display, boasting a humble pride and maybe even some bravado. I was just a boy when I first felt the threading and stitching of this glorious wear. My eyes were young and unburdened when navigating the dark forest green of its pelt. What a sight to behold. What a feeling to don. The jacket was no longer 65% of one thing and 35% of another. It was now solely 100% me. The jacket belonged to a soldier, standing on guard for thee. True, north, strong, and free. When that day in August came, it was the first time that I would don that uniform with any sense of reluctance. Bravado had evaporated like droplets of rain to a hot sidewalk. The uniform now felt uncomfortable, albeit necessary. I was young. 23, actually. That's how old I was when I held my first dead body. The body of a brother. Well, what was left of him, anyway. On August 11th of 2006, Corporal Andrew James Eichlenboom, Boomer, was killed while on mission in Afghanistan. 23 years of life, sacrificed within the blink of an eye, many miles from home. I had just returned to the unit from another tasking when I first learned of his death. My brother, Bowman, told me about it. After his utterances, the car filled with a thick blanket of silence and unspoken introspection. The ambience of sibilantly roaring tires from beneath us was the only other sound to break through my ears. I didn't know how to feel. I mean, he was a medic. Medics aren't supposed to die, right? But he did. Just 2 weeks away from coming home. I don't think we spoke another word to one another on the way back to the unit. I recall staring out the window into the ether of thought for most of the ride back. Somewhere out there, there was one less of us now. I didn't know Boomer in life. Not really, anyway. Only in death. What a thing. To become friends with a dead man. You see, in the days after his ill-fated mission, I would learn stories as told by those who were there with him, those who knew him and those who loved him. I would meet his brothers, his mother, and his father. I would hold the remains of a kind man. Even in death, you could feel his light push through the cold steel of his casket. Over the next several days, my brothers and I would be sequestered to drill halls, practicing with endless staccato the movements and mechanics befitting the actions of carrying a slain hero home. He was our brother. He deserved nothing less than perfection. We all drove our bodies into dehydration and muscle fatigue to get it right, over and over and over again. Drive the body, the mind will follow. I had trouble sleeping the night before Trenton. Trenton was the Air Force base that Boomer would be flying into upon his return from that land of sand and stone. I was sharing a room with three other men. I could hear the low growl orchestra of snoring and slumber. I was the only one singing out of tune. I was awake. Woefully silent in body. Mind, however, that was as loud as any rumbling freight car. I wanted to do right by him and his family. They deserved that. We had practiced hard and for long hours leading up to this horrible day. Sure, but what if it wasn't enough? What if I was out of step at one point and his poor mom noticed? How horrible that would be. My body refused me comfort, and my mind continued confabulations with fearful thoughts. Knowing that I would not sleep, I slowly and quietly withdrew myself from the thin padding of my military cot and slinked into the hallway. I walked with exaggeratingly quiet gait down the halls of the barracks, nearing the phone bank. The bare soles of my feet lamented sticky orations of flesh tearing away from linoleum. I was nervous about what I was about to do. Call home. My mother was currently not speaking with me and had not been answering the phone as of late, much to my dismay. My pertinacity would see me call her at least once a day in efforts to break the wall of obstinacy that so characterized my mother. A futile endeavor. I wanted to speak with her, though. This all felt so horribly awful. We had been given terribly intimate details on the death of Boomer. Details I would much like to forget. Another futile endeavor. Why was my mother not speaking to me? Well, when I left home to join the army, we had been residing in a 3-bedroom subsidized home. My mother couldn't work. She was too sick. She had cancer. So we had to rely on the fluctuating kindness of government and small-town welfare systems. Not an easy way to grow up. When I left home and began my training, the lease was up for renewal. My mother was not able to say when or even if I would return home to this place. As such, she was requested, well, told, that she had to relocate to another unit. There was only a 1-bedroom available, meaning that my brother was out of a place to live as well. My mother did not function well alone. So she began doing what she so often did, devise a plan in her head and assume that she had talked to us about it and that we had all agreed with her, a conversation that we were always absent for. My mother knew that I had a steady job now. She knew that my brother was also great with money and he too worked full time. So she thought that she would get us together and buy a house. By the time I had learned of her master plan, my mother had already found a real estate agent, picked out a home, viewed it, liked it, wanted it, and said that we would take it. Now keep in mind, I was new to the army at this point. That means that I'm just a private. That also means that I'm not really making bank. Not by a long shot. You don't join the army to become rich. When my mother asked me if I would co-sign a mortgage with my brother, I apprehensively and timorously declined. I just didn't have the money. My mother felt slighted by this, so she told me that she was going to kill herself. And when that threat did not work nor sway my mind, she banished me to the muted aisle of the family corner. Usually it was a transient aisle. My mother was often not speaking to one of my siblings or another at any given time. I guess now it was my turn in the batter's box. A turn that lasted 2 years. I picked up the plastic receiver and dialed the number home. I heard the metallic purr of a calling line. A call doomed to go unanswered. I left a message.
Hey, Mom. Sorry, I know it's late. It's late here, too. I could really use a talk right now. I have to carry Boomer tomorrow. I'm scared. I don't want to cry, you know, in front of his family. In front of his brother. You know? Mom, if you can hear me, just pick up, please. I'm sorry, Mom. Mom? Okay, well, I love you. It'll be on the news if you want to watch it. Good night, Mom. I love you.
What you just heard was exactly what I said that day. I know that because when it comes to my mom, my memory is painfully clear. I didn't sleep a wink. I watched as the black canvas of overhead gave way to the gray hue of a new day from outside my window. When the alarm clocks rang, I was already seated on the edge of my bed. I greeted the lads with a cordial and weighted nod. I was fucking exhausted. We all remained reticent as we donned our meticulously tailored wares. Ceremonial dress belts, gloves and keepers, all of it, perfect and without flaw. The way it had to be. The way it should be. The way it was. That day, while wearing my fitted jacket, I would carry my brother. I would watch as his family crumbled internally as they watched us slide his remains into the mouth of a hungry hearse. I would meet General Rick Hillier that day, too. He would speak like only he can. He told us that we did our country and Boomer's family proud. I don't know. After that initial repatriation,
We retreated back to our barracks, packed up our uniforms and belongings, and readied to fly from Ontario to BC. The jacket was worn throughout all of these days. It was worn when Boomer was laid to rest. I watched as the earth embraced his essence and welcomed him back to the nature of all things. I would repeat this woeful experience by burying another brother, a man I knew quite well, Corporal Michael Stalker. My jacket and I watched as the earth took him away as well. That was in May of 2008. In July of 2008, I was freshly released from the army. Mere days, in fact. The jacket was no longer mine to wear. But on that god-awful day in July when my phone rang with the news of another loss, another brother, I held its now formless frame in my hands. Many things had been soaked into the fabric of that jacket up to that point, my tears included. And on that day in July, it welcomed more from me. Colin was dead. And I was just a nameless, faceless civilian now, holding the folded fabric of who I once was. A soldier. A wounded soldier. That jacket now hangs in my closet. Never to be worn again.